Moncrief on News Talk.
Chimpanzees, like people on a night out, tend to go for a pee with their friends. It's a phenomenon known as contagious urination. Hopefully a case of contagious urination won't hit either myself or Jonathan DeBurka-Butler, who's here to bring us a story from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you doing?
Colombia we're going to go to first. And you kind of one had the sense that in Colombia, a lot of the conflict, especially conflict to do with drugs, had died down. But it seems to be back in at least a part of the country.
Yeah, well, certainly the civil war side of it, I suppose, had died down. I mean, the peace deal, would you believe the peace deal is nearly 9 years old at this stage? Yeah, but not everybody has signed up to that, of course. And that is part of the problem connected to this story, because it involves a rebel group called ELN, the National Liberation Army. They've been around for a long time as well. And I don't think they were ever as big as FARC, and they came from a slightly different route, albeit they were left-wing, but I think it was left-wing university professors, that type of thing, rather than peasant farmers. But anyway, we don't need to go into that too much. But anyway, they've never joined the peace tent, or they haven't as of yet. And they've actually been in negotiations in recent years with the current government under President Gustavo Petro, okay? So that's one part of this particular equation. Those peace talks have now been stopped. And the reason those have been stopped is because of the story that's happening up now in the north of the country on the border with Venezuela, right? So about 32,000 people have been displaced. The guts of about 100 people have been killed so far in the last couple of weeks. And it's all because of a dispute between ELN, this National Liberation Army, and a dissident faction of FARC, who most people will know were the main protagonists, shall we say. Now, yes, they'd argue it was the government, but anyway, we're one of the main players in that civil war, and who have very much come inside the tent. Indeed, the current president, Gustavo Petro, who I spoke about before, was a former member of FARC, right? So anyway, there's a dispute going on between a faction of FARC and the ELN over drugs. Okay, it appears that there was a deal made a while back between these two in this region called Catatumbo. Okay, and in Catatumbo, they said, right, we'll look after our drugs and our drug shipments. You look after yours and we'll leave each other alone. And everything was going along fine until somebody decided not to leave the drugs alone, right? And that's what they're fighting over at the moment, okay? Various different news agencies have said that it appears that a shipment has gone missing, okay? And obviously that's the thing that has activated this this particular fight between them. The media outlets can't say for sure, but they think that they're kind of putting two and two together, and they're saying that in December of last year, counter-narcotics agents in the Dominican Republic seized 9.5 tons of cocaine, which they said had originated from this particular area. So the media outlets are putting two and two together, and they're saying, okay, we think it might be that shipment that they're arguing over. Now, whose shipment it is, whether it belongs to ELN or this FARC dissident group, and how, you know, got into the hands of the authorities in the Dominican Republic. Was there a tip off? You know, is it a case of if all of a sudden one side loses this 9.5 tons of cocaine, that the price that the others can sell it for goes
up? Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Is it something to do with that? But anyway, somebody's unhappy, or several people are unhappy, and they're fighting over this. So the president of Colombia has gone in and he's basically said, right, I've had enough of this. But interestingly, he seems to be putting most of the blame on ELN. So the media reports that are coming out are saying that ELN troops are going from door to door shooting people they believe are, you know, have signed up with the rival group or with FARC. The government are also saying, okay, we had rescinded arrest warrants for 31 commanders of ELN while these negotiations were going on, but we're going to reactivate those now so you can be sure that if we find you, we will arrest you. And he's also made a couple of statements where he's basically said that the ELN are a mafia and that they've gone from being an insurgent guerrilla group to a narco-armed organisation. So seems to be, you know, and given his history as a former member of FARC, he's saying, okay, FARC are inside the tent now, ELN aren't.
Bottle black, yes. Yeah, okay, you know. But he mightn't be incorrect in the sense
no,
that
he
that's
might
what
not
they
be.
Are.
No, absolutely not. He may not be, but yeah, and but whether that, whether it'll help things along is the other question.
It sounds like what you're saying, that they seem that the president and the government of Quellenbe feel the only option is to try and negotiate a peace rather than send government troops in there to try and enforce one.
Well, they have actually sent, now they are negotiating. So the peace that they were negotiating was separate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it was nothing necessarily to do with the argument that was going on between the two groups up here. So what in fact they've done is, as I said, is they've cancelled the peace talks in relation to the place of ELN within the state of Colombia, shall we say, and their, you know, their guerrilla war side of it, if you know what I mean, or fighting for their beliefs. And in fact, he has deployed some troops to the area. Now, whether that means they're going in as peacekeepers or what they're going to do, I don't know. But he's deployed 5,000 troops to the area now, and he says he's going to bring in more, and that he's not going to tolerate these actions. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But I can't see it improving. I can see it getting worse before it improves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, indeed. Right, France, we're going to go to next. Now, this is about a divorce case. I assume in France then that they don't have no-fault divorce just based on this and that, and that a reason for it had to be given.
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I think they probably, this couple sued each other for divorce.
Yes.
But neither of them won. I should say that. There was no compensation handed out in the end here, if that's what you're referring to. Sorry,
right,
my knowledge of my deep knowledge of law in this case isn't great. This particular couple, right, or this story relates to a woman who's only named, her initials are given, HW, right? And she married her husband in 1984. They had four children. The reports going back say that the marital relations deteriorated after the birth of the first child. A subsequent child was born with a disability, so things kind of got worse. In 2002, she says that her husband started physically and verbally abusing her, and she stopped having sex with him in 2004. Now, listeners might say, well, why is he mentioning that? Mentioning it because it's integral to the rest of the story, all right? So she petitioned for divorce in 2012, citing that abuse, right? And he counterclaimed, right? And he wanted to assign full blame for divorce to her. So does that answer your question?
That does answer the question, okay. Yes. No, because say in Ireland, if you want to get a divorce, you don't have to give a reason.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that, I have to be honest with you. Okay. Well, I don't know if you do here either, to be honest with you, in France. But anyway, in this case, he counterclaimed. But it would appear from that he made a claim.
Yeah.
So he is trying to assign some sort of blame. Anyway, he wanted to assign full blame for the divorce to her and accused her of neglecting marital duties. Now, those marital duties were later interpreted by courts as her refusal to have sex with him.
Mm.
Okay? And through three levels of courts, right? So through civil courts, through the Court of Appeal, and then the Supreme Court, or the Court of Cassation, as they call it there, they went with the husband all the way through and basically says,
really?
you're wholly responsible for this divorce and the collapse of this marriage. The blame is on you. Now, as I said at the start, no compensation was given to either side. So it was never a question of money. This woman, she could have left it, actually, because if in one way, because there was no financial burden on her or whatever. She could have walked away.
Well, probably there was some taking repeated court cases.
Well, it could be the case. But anyway, she decided, no, I'm not having this. I'm going to bring it to the European Courts of Human Rights, okay? And the European Court of Human Rights has now found in her favour and basically stated in their judgment that the idea, which I should say seems to be an interpretation of French law and not something that's laid down in French law, but I'll talk about that in a minute, said the ECHR stated that the idea of marital duties in French law ignored the importance of consent in sexual relations. They went on to basically say that the very existence of such a marital obligation ran counter to sexual freedom and the right to bodily autonomy. And they went on and concluded by saying agreeing to marry does not mean agreeing to have sex in future. Mm. Now, I think that raises its own questions, because does that mean that you're obliged to have sex on the first day or for the first week of your marriage or the first month or until you have children?
Yeah,
you know, when does that stop?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So anyway. Yeah, but implicit in that is an idea that if you're in a marriage, you're somehow required to have sex.
That's how, so I, so the one thing that I saw in the reports that was a, the piece of law that was referred to in France's civil code was Article 215 of France's civil code, right, which states that spouses are mutually obliged to a communal life. There's no mention or explicit reference to sexual relations in that code. And I went and I had a look at other articles, right? There's a whole chapter of this. Basically, it goes from 212 to Article 212 to 226. And I went through them. They're all fairly short, so I wasn't spending hours on it. And there's no specific, you know, line that says you have to have sex with your husband or vice versa, whatever it might be. So what they're saying here is that this has been interpreted by those French courts, that that communal living involves, you have to, it says, you know, you have to have sex with your husband.
That's,
but there's so nothing
interesting
that lays it down.
Yeah, that is so, especially for a French court, I would have thought they'd, Anyway, right.
Anyway.
Portugal, we're going to go to next, where, this is a bizarre one. A politician has been accused of stealing suitcases at an airport.
Yeah, this is very bad news for the man involved. A 40-year-old politician by the name of Miguel Arruda, who on Tuesday last was questioned and then charged with luggage theft. Okay, so this was after some missing suitcases were allegedly found in his home. Now, it wasn't just that some of the suitcases were found in his home. CCTV footage, it's an airport.
Yes.
Right, an airport full of cameras. Saw him actually taking a suitcase, his own, he took his own suitcase off, and then he picked a smaller one from a carousel, opened up his own suitcase, placed it into his own suitcase, and went off home. Now, there is a suspicion, and some media outlets have gone with this theory, that Arruda had taken these suitcases, and this wasn't the first time that he had done it, and was selling the contents of those suitcases online. Now, what he was selling, I don't know. Like jumpers or whatever was in them. I have no idea. And we don't know either. Anyway, the consequences for him are very bad. He is a member of what would be called a right-wing party called Chega. And they've done quite well for themselves in the last number of years. They've gone from one seat in 2019 up to 50 seats in 2024, but they're now down to 49 because of him.
Yes.
He's been kicked out of the party. And when he walked into Parliament the other day, he was actually booed by his own party, as he was told by the head of the House to sit at the back of the House, where people who aren't affiliated to parties are made to sit. So all very embarrassing for him. But of course, he's doubled down. And he, in true right-wing fashion, is saying that he's been crucified on the public square. But until proven otherwise, I am innocent. And he claims that the video surveillance footage could have been generated by AI. I'm surprised that he didn't say that it was generated by AI rather than could have been. Well, there you
could
go.
Have been. Right. OK. But then again, I could have been actually stealing a suitcase. That's such a bizarre one,
really. Very strange.
Right. India has ordered the seizure of offensive paintings. So how offensive were we talking?
Yeah. OK. So the paintings in question were done by an artist who's now dead, a man by the name of Makbul Fida Hussain, who apparently is very famous in India. He died in 2011 at the age of 95. He has always been a controversial figure. Back in 2006, he had to apologise for a painting that he did called Mother India. Now, I had a look at that painting, and basically it depicts a woman nude, and she's contorted to make her look as if she's in the shape of India, the map of India,
okay.
Right? It's cubist. It's very tastefully done. There's nothing particularly erotic about it.
Yeah.
Okay? It's extremely inoffensive. Okay. Now, he got in trouble for that before, but we can talk about that another time. In this particular instance, there was a gallery in Delhi called the Delhi Art Gallery, which was doing a retrospective, right? So from the end of October to the middle of December. And there was over 100 pictures at this. Lots of people attended it. But there was one particular complainant, a woman by the name of Amita Shakdeva. She's a lawyer. And she said that she went along to the exhibition on the 4th of December. And she saw these two paintings of two Hindu gods. And she saw women naked depicted beside them, and she didn't like it. Okay, so she went, she took photographs of what she called the offensive paintings, and she went to the police 5 days later and reported them. The investigating police officer, and this is where it gets really weird, the investigating police officer went back to the Delhi Art Gallery with her on the sixth day afterwards, and the paintings were gone, apparently. Now, she said that she went up to the reception and said, where are the two paintings I took photos of? And they said, according to her anyway, we never had them up in the first place. She went back to the courts and she said, I want you to seize this or protect the CCTV there, and I'll show you the proof that these two offensive to me paintings were up on the walls. And so she's gone back to the courts and the courts have looked at it. The police have investigated it and they've said, well, it looks like you did have those paintings up there. So now you need to hand them over. Now, where this goes from here, I don't know. But it sounds to me like this art gallery, in trying to cover up something that they probably wasn't particularly offensive and something that they probably would have got away with, if we look at precedents from other judgments in Indian law around so-called offensive paintings. And they've gone now and they've messed with evidence. And I think that could end up getting them in more trouble than the paintings themselves, if you know what I mean.
So one could infer from that that when the woman first saw the painting, she must have said something to people in the art gallery, well, or perhaps they knew her already.
I don't know if they knew her already, or if she might have, they might have been given a tip off from the police when she went to report them, because there was a gap of a good few days. She says that she took the photo on the 4th and she didn't lodge the report until the 9th. And in the meantime, she had done research into this artist. Now, how she didn't know about him, I don't know, because, as I said, he's very famous. He's a very famous Indian artist. And then she, you know, put in a report, and the next day went with the investigating police officer and the pictures were gone. So I don't know what's happening here.
That's
but
very
it's a story that might grow legs.
Yeah. And the artist, is he still alive?
No, he died when he was having that trouble with the painting that I spoke about, Mother India, back in 2006. It got so bad that he actually left the country.
Oh, God.
In 2007, I think, there was a court case around it in 2008 that was eventually kicked out, but he ended up staying and living in London for the rest of his life in self-imposed exile because of the trouble.
Given what's happening in India in general, is there a little, is this indicative of perhaps a bit of a tide of?
So this is, I think, why I brought it up, but I wanted to bring it up in a different way. It seems to be getting into every aspect of Indian life now, where people are just getting offended at absolutely anything. So there does seem to be a bit of a, what we call it, a puritanical streak that's coming through society there, that wasn't necessarily there before, or at least it was probably there, but wasn't tolerated as acceptable.
Well, it could be kind of attached to, you know, the deepening religious divides in the country, that people's
exactly
religious beliefs are being offended.
That's exactly what's going on. All right, I would suggest that's exactly what's going on. Yeah.
Right, South Korea we're going to go to finally, and they're going to remove concrete barriers at airports.
They are, and this obviously comes off the back of that terrible crash that happened at the end of December, where 179 people were killed. For anybody who saw the footage of it, it's quite shocking. You know, we don't know exactly what happened or how it happened, but we know that the landing gear didn't come down.
Yeah.
And the plane basically skidded along the runway and went into a wall that really shouldn't have been there, okay? And this was the first thing that was examined. So the authorities in South Korea, they went and they had a look around various airports in the country, and they found 7 places now where something similar seems to be in place. And apparently it's not just a wall to keep things out. There was actually equipment in the wall, something called a localizer, which apparently helps with navigation. So they're going to remove that, and they're going to either put the localizer buried in the ground, or they're going to build, you know, a barrier that can be broken through by a plane, you know, plastic or something like, or whatever sort of material would be less damaging to a plane, should a plane go into it. Sorry. So, you know, this is all off the back of that terrible crash. But the sad thing about this is that there was a report which has now emerged, which was uploaded apparently in 2024, which said that the concrete embankment was too close to the end of the runway and should be removed.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Right. So what should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, several things coming up. A busy week. So obviously tomorrow, the confirmation hearing for Robert F. Kennedy to become the U.S. Health Secretary.
That should
going
be fun.
Ahead.
Yes.
That'll be interesting. All right. Wednesday, on the same day, is the Chinese New Year, Year of the Snake. I don't know if that says anything about the year that's happening. Then Thursday, John Prescott's funeral. You remember John Prescott?
Yes,
two jabs.
Yeah.
He died on the 20th of November.
Was there an inquiry into his death or something?
No, I don't think there was. It's just, you know how long it takes to get buried in the UK. So you wouldn't want to be in a rush to get to heaven there.
In those standards,
that's a very long time, isn't it? Yeah. So poor old John Prescott, anyway, he is going to be buried on Thursday. And then the following day, the 5th anniversary of Brexit. Going well.
Funny, it feels like it was 20 years ago Brexit took place. 5 years kind of surprised me. And no doubt it'll be marked by huge celebrations all around the United Kingdom.
Absolutely,
Will be thrilled with remembering that. Jonathan, thanks a million as ever. Thanks, Jonathan De Barca Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.